I'm not the best-trained pup in the litter.
I roll my eyes at his metaphor, but feel a grin nevertheless pulling at my lips. I venture to say that you're the one still peeing in your crate.
I have a lot to learn.
That's an understatement. With a quick tug, he pulls the purse from my grasp.
Good thing you're the type of woman for the job, eh?
Damn you, heart. Stop pounding like that. Swallowing past my nerves, I ask, what kind of woman is that? His teeth flash white with a grin.
A badass. Now, do you want breakfast or not?
He thinks I'm a badass? I shouldn't find that as thrilling as I do. I'm supposed to hate him, really hate him. But our quick banter reminds me of our friendship back in Detroit, and as much as I should tell him to drive straight to Manhattan, I find myself weakening. Just a little, maybe. Then again, breakfast means making pleasant conversation with him, something that neither of us has done exceptionally well with each other since reuniting in Mr. Collins' office. Since then, my days have been spent doing damage control by calling the publications that Andre has ignored like the plague for the last few months. Some places, like Sports Illustrated, were amenable to opening the doors again. Some places, like GQ, hung up on me after I mentioned Andre's name. With 21 days left, I'm quickly realizing that the damage Andre has done to his reputation might not be fixed within the course of a month. Not without a whole lot of groveling and heartfelt apologies. Since neither groveling nor heartfelt apologies are his thing, we're left with one option. Fame. Hopefully today's gig will help on that front. What am I saying? We need it to help in every way that matters. Breakfast will probably do us some good. We can talk business. Stuff like that. Only business. The sound of the trunk slamming breaks me from my thoughts.
You good with that?
Andre asks. Am I good with what?
IHOP.
I haven't been to an IHOP in years. Is there one close by? He claps his hand over the driver's door, and even though I can't see his eyes, I know he's giving me an "Are you serious?" expression.
Right up the road. We can grab some pancakes and some of those home fries you like so much, and then hit the highway.
At that opportune moment, my stomach lets loose an unmistakable growl, and I swear, even though I can't see him, I practically hear him grin in victory.
Get in the car, Zoe.
He murmurs.
You know you want to.
I get in the car. Within 20 minutes, we're seated at a booth in the back of the restaurant, which I suppose doesn't really matter because we are one of only two parties. The group at the other table is definitely wasted. They howl as they eat, utensils flaring through the air, laughter cracking out like a hyena's bark. Andre and I, on the other hand, seem to have lost whatever mojo we had outside of my house and sit across from each other in near silence. It's not as uncomfortable as it sounds. Just kidding. The silence is brutal. On a scale of 1 to 10, our current communication problems are at least a 500, which is so not how it used to be. Does he remember the amount of times we hit up restaurants throughout Detroit? Except that then conversation flowed like finely poured wine. If anything, we used to have too much to say. So much so that there were a handful of times when restaurant staff had to kick us out because it was closing time. The night hardly ever ended at the establishment's front doors. We continued the conversation by one of our cars, usually mine, so that he could make sure I got in safely before I headed home. My fingers flatten out a thin white napkin. Andre plays with the handle of his chipped mug. God, what a miserable pair we make. I open my mouth to speak, and funnily enough, he does the same, so that our words tumble over each other. I wave to him. Go ahead, you first. Shaking his head, Andre readjusts his ball cap.
Ladies first.
It's on the tip of my tongue to make a sly remark, but I hold it back, swallowing it down and shoving it deep where it won't threaten to reemerge again. I fold the napkin in half and then in fourths. I spoke with Sports Illustrated yesterday, I say slowly, even as I wonder if I should hold off on business until after his first cup of coffee. They're interested in rescheduling a feature piece sometime in the next 2 weeks. His mouth quirks, but it isn't a humorous smile. If anything, it looks a little worn, a little frayed.
Somehow managed to swing it within your trial period?
My cheeks heat at his words, and I return to my napkin, folding it and folding it and folding it until it's a triangular-shaped football. I may have told them that it was urgent. His laugh is short, though not necessarily unkind. I try again. They agreed to it, by the way. I shove the napkin to the interior part of the table against the arrangement of plastic maple syrup bottles. Why did you flake out on them in the first place? Just then, a server approaches our table to take our order, while Andre goes overboard with coffee, OJ, a stack of blueberry pancakes, and two orders of bacon. I opt for a bowl of oatmeal and a single pancake. Tea, not coffee. Andre snorts as the waiter takes our order back to the kitchen, and it's so sarcastic that I clap my palms on the table and demand, "What?"
"Oatmeal?"
He reaches for a syrup bottle and drags it close.
"Zoe, we both know that you can out-eat me if you wanted."
It's true, and we both know it. But my stomach is a bundle of nerves, thanks to him, and I don't think I could handle more than what I ordered. "Maybe I don't want to," I tell him stiffly, unwilling to admit the truth. And the truth is a muddled space between want and dislike. I don't like him, not anymore, but my body can't help but notice his. Notice the way his hair is perfectly disheveled, and the way he's taken a razor to his face and erased the permanent 5 o'clock shadow he's always got going on. His jaw is sharp, masculine, and I feel the most irrational urge to slide my palm over his face just to feel the smooth skin. Yep, I'm officially off my rocker. The server brings us our drinks, saving both of us the trouble of making more awkward, stilted conversation. Not that the reprieve lasts long. Andre downs half of his coffee, then clasps his hands around the mug. His gaze is still hidden by the shadow of his hat, but from the firm set of his mouth, I know he's staring me down. I can sense the weight of it.
"So, Sports Illustrated said yes? Who said no?"
I fidget uncomfortably on my side of the booth. "Well..."
"Zoe, don't bullshit me."
I heave a big sigh. "Pretty much everyone."
"Everyone?"
One hand leaves his coffee mug to remove his hat. Without asking if it's okay, he rests it atop my purse, which I had placed on the table. Then he turns back to me, his brow lifted in disbelief.
"Everyone is a pretty broad claim. What about USA Hockey?"
I shake my head. "Said no." He lifts his coffee mug to his mouth and blows the steam away, as though buying himself time. Over the rim, he asks,
"Breakout?"
"No." His thumb slips down the handle, caressing the white porcelain. It's hard not to imagine that thumb skimming down the ridges of my spine. I slam the brake on those thoughts and mentally shove them into a metal box with a never-open-again label.
"Okay, so non-hockey magazines."
He lowers the mug to the table a little too forcefully, and the tea in my cup sloshes over the rim. I steal back my football-shaped napkin, unraveling it so that I can wipe up the mess.
"Time Magazine reached out a few months ago."
"I already called. I spoke to two editors, but after being stood up by you, and then the way you've treated some of their reporters in the past, they aren't interested."
"Fuck."
He says it with no prelude, but I can sense his shock. A year ago, I may have even slid onto his side of the booth to put an arm around his shoulder in comfort. In this moment, however, I still myself by holding onto the edges of the booth. Lowering my voice, I ask, "What happened this last year, Andre?" Once again, the IHOP gods save Andre from having to confess. Our server chooses that exact moment to swing by our table with our feast, or Andre's feast and my small portion. At the sight of his plate of bacon, I regret my life decisions and shove a spoon into my soupy oatmeal. He must catch my bacon ogling, though, because he holds up a crispy piece.
If I give you this, I'll answer your questions, and then you have to promise not to pry anymore.
My gaze lands on the bacon, and I swear I begin to salivate. Is this another condition? I ask, swirling my spoon around in the oatmeal bowl. Like when you told me last week that we won't be having sex again? As if on cue, the bacon gives up on being stiff and cracks down the middle to dangle limply in the air. A laugh breaks free from my chest just before I clap my hand over my mouth. Oh, God, I whisper from behind my splayed fingers. It's a sign. Dark eyes narrow on me even as Andre drops the bacon on his plate like he's embarrassed to be holding a wilted slice.
A sign of what?
Our lives. Uncontrollable laughter takes hold of my body because, holy cow, it's so incredibly accurate. Like the piece of bacon, both Andre and I have been broken this last year. I mean, if you really want to look at it, we're both still trying to pick up the pieces of our ill-timed shagging at the Red Wings facility. There's a beat of breath before Andre, no doubt sensing the irony, gives in. His shoulders don't bounce the same way that mine do, but the corners of his eyes crease, and his mouth ticks up from its permanent frown. When he's smiling, his features move from broodingly attractive to downright sexy. Before I can halt the words, I blurt out, "You should smile more. It looks good on you." His laughter slowly edges into silence. Then, so quietly I almost don't hear him, he says,
"Maybe I don't feel like smiling. You thought of that, Zoe?"
And just like that, we've come back full circle. "Tell me what you were going to say before the server came around with our food." I watch him dig into his blueberry pancakes, and I take the not-so-subtle hint. "Okay, so his year is off-limits. I can get behind that. Though it does feel a little unfair that he should dangle questions in front of me and then snatch them away. Then again, we aren't exactly friends any longer, so I probably shouldn't feel slighted. Fun fact? I totally do, though. So it comes as a surprise when two pieces of bacon land on my plate. Neither piece is the broken, half-dangly one. My gaze cuts to his face. "Thank you?
This is going to be my last season."
That's all he says. That's it. And yet I feel the weight of his depression migrate onto my shoulders. I stare at him openly, trying my best to make the words mean something in my head. "What do you mean, this is going to be your last season?" With a sigh, he pushes his plate away and folds his arms over his chest.
"I thought we agreed that you wouldn't pry."
"No. You told me that I shouldn't pry, but that was before you dropped that bomb on me." I snag one of the bacon slices he's given me and pop it into my mouth, chewing, thinking. I decide I need more time and opt to eat the second slice now instead of saving it. "Why will this be your last season?"
"Zoe, no prying."
"Does this have to do with the sex thing?" I ask. "Because there's no way I can't at this point. He's made such a big stink out of it that it can only mean one thing. Did you pick up a life-altering STD or something?" The ridiculous comment pulls a laugh from him.
"I don't have herpes."
"I'd hope not," I say primly.
"Even if I did, it wouldn't matter."
"It would sort of matter," I tell him, waving my hand back and forth in a so-so motion. "I have to say, this doesn't make your actions any better. You've still been a dick."
"I've always been a dick."
"Well, this last year, you've really upped the ante."
"I try my best."
He says it with such a blasé tone that I roll my eyes. "Maybe you should try your worst." He mimics me and rolls his eyes, too.
"I've been at my worst, Zoe. And I can tell you that this me isn't nearly as bad."
I want to press him for more, but the expression on his face stops me. Sometimes it's best to find a speck of patience, not that I have any.
Chapter 9. Andre. She's planning something. For the last hour and a half since we hit the road, Zoe has been fidgeting restlessly in the passenger seat, which in turn makes me feel restless. Although in full honesty, I've been feeling that way for 7 days now. Having Zoe back in my life is both a blessing and a curse. I missed her spitfire attitude, and if our last few interactions have shown anything, I still get my rocks off on driving her up a wall just so I can see the heat darken her brown eyes and warm her cheeks with color. Maybe that makes me an asshole, but damn it, it's fun to tease her. But that's also the problem. When I'm knee-deep in our banter, I forget that I'm supposed to be making her want nothing to do with me. That's the goal. That's the mission. And I'm pretty sure that I'm failing 70% of the time. I cast my eyes over her slim body. She's decked out in comfortable attire, and for once isn't wearing stilettos. She looks exactly like the Zoe I remember from our movie nights, when she rested her feet in my lap and cradled a massive popcorn bowl against her stomach. And that, Zoe, is dangerous. Who am I kidding? Zoe McKenzie is dangerous to me in every way that matters. The sound of her nails tapping against her cell phone leads me off the edge. Do you need to piss? Out of my periphery, I see her shoulders jerk. What? No. Don't look at her, man. Do you have to change your pad or something? Oh my God, Andre, why would you even ask that? This time, I do cut a glance in her direction. Her pink lips are parted in shock, and fuck me, but I want to kiss them. Of course I do, because when have I ever found Zoe unattractive? The answer to that is never. Everything about her shines like a beacon only I can see. The thought of pounding my forehead into the steering wheel sounds like a blast right about now. Because, I mutter, unclenching my jaw, you keep moving around. My sister does the same thing when she's on her... thing. Thing, Andre? Her laughter echoes in my car. The sound's so fucking sweet it almost hurts. How old are you? I palm the steering wheel, following the curvy Connecticut highway. Old enough. Then say it with me now, she says, poking me in the arm with her perfectly manicured finger. Period. One more time. Slower now, so you can really work on it. Period. Is it wrong that I simultaneously want to toss her into the back seat and kiss her silent as much as I want to keep egging her on? I go with the latter, because, fuck it, the kissing thing is strictly off-limits. Because you made it off-limits, like an idiot. I reach for the car's radio, only for Zoe to swat my hand at the last second. Jesus, Zoe! At the sound of my displeasure, she leans back in the passenger's seat smugly. Instinctively, my hand leaves the steering wheel, heading for ground zero. Don't touch the radio, Beaumont. I jerk my chin toward her. Are you kidding me? This is my car. Well, yes, but we could have taken my car, but you wanted to be all high and mighty and... You drive like shit, I mutter with a shake of my head. Hey, that's not true. Hell yes it is. I bite down on my lower lip, debating on whether I should just go for broke. What's that saying again? If you can't handle the heat, then stay out of the kitchen? Something like that. If Zoe wants to join the trash-talk train, then she needs to kick it with the best of us. Let me rephrase that, I tell her. You drive worse than every senior citizen in the state of Massachusetts combined. I sense her watching me. Her nails tap the cell phone impatiently. Then, I think you're just jealous. A burst of laughter escapes me. Of your driving skills? Nah, honey. You must have me confused with somebody else. Who in the world would I have you confused with? No one else has ever accused me of driving poorly. She trails off with a little gasp, and damn it, but the sound has me looking at her again. The gasp is sexy. The way her eyes narrow is sexy. The way she thrusts her finger at me in an air jab is sexy. You're still mad at me, aren't you? She adds. Because of the time I backed your car into a fire hydrant. Fingers flexing over the steering wheel, I grunt. No. She doesn't look away, and I shift uncomfortably in the driver's seat, flick the air vents toward me, then fiddle with my ball cap. I'm not mad per se, but Jesus, it'd been a nice car. Then again, seeing her shocked expression when she'd realized what she'd done had immediately soaked up the anger. Zoe had looked so damn cute, with her mouth pursed in an O and her brows nearly touching her hairline as she sputtered inarticulately. Not that I'd ever offer for her to pull a repeat, but the price tag for fixing the damn thing had been well worth having her fawn all over me for weeks.
"You are," she whispers now. "You're totally still mad. It's been almost 2 years."
"Zoe, I'm not mad." I tug on my left earlobe, and she points at me.
"You are. You're doing the earlobey thing."
"Earlobey is not a word," I say, struggling to keep my gaze locked on the road when all I want to do is look at her. Damn it, but I've missed this between us. The banter, the laughter, the reminder that one glance at Zoe is enough to make my day feel complete.
"You're sidestepping the issue," she tells me, folding her arms over her chest. "I can't believe you're still holding a grudge."
"Of all the things I could be holding a grudge against you for, the fucking fire hydrant isn't..." I cut off with a curse. Then again, this is what I was worried about. This constant banter, for me at least, sidelines as foreplay. Not with any other woman, mind you, but with Zoe? Hell yeah. Put me in a room with her. Don't even let me touch her, and I'll be harder than a rock within minutes just thanks to our conversations. Zoe casually taps the bill of my Blades baseball hat.
"So you're holding grudges against me?"
"No. Zoe's not the one to blame here, I am. But there's no way for me to explain that to her without giving up details, and the details aren't something I'm willing to share. Not even with her or for her. She's better off not knowing. Or maybe it's that I'm better off pretending that parts of my past don't exist. My heart clenches with the memories, and for the millionth time in 3 years I wish that I was as emotionless as the public perceives me to be. Hell, if I was a block of ice, Zoe wouldn't be getting under my skin right now. I wouldn't notice the strip of skin above her waistband, or the way she smells delicious, like fresh citrus. I wouldn't be tempted to slip my hand around to the back of her neck and drag her over for a kiss. I wouldn't want to hear all about her year after we went our separate ways.
"Nothing to say to that?" she prompts dryly.
Maybe it's because I'm so worked up already, but her question reminds me that we need boundaries. Concrete boundaries. Stop thinking about all the ways you want her in bed. I make a show of whipping off my hat and tossing it on top of the dashboard. With a sigh of frustration, I drag my hand through my hair and say the words I know will have her wanting to flip me off. "Are you going to talk the rest of the way to New York City?" She freezes, and I count the seconds as she meticulously crosses one leg over the other and folds her hands in her lap. Her knuckles are white from gripping her phone. Guilt punches me in the gut.
"Zoe,"
she cuts me off with a raised palm.
"You're right. I do want to talk the rest of the way to New York. Is that so bad?"
"Is this a trick question?" I ask her, easing the car along a curve in the road. "One of those times where it starts out all fun and games and ends with one of us crying?"
"No."
From her defensive tone, I gather she actually means yes. "Don't let her see how much she gets to you." In a rough voice, I say, "What if I have nothing to say?" She shrugs. "I guess we could sit in silence for the next 2 hours. I mean, if that's what you want." I want to listen to the radio. Scratch that, I want to know if she tastes as good as I remember. Seeing as though that definitely isn't an option for more reasons than I can name, I'll settle on listening to the radio and picturing my grandmother in a bikini. Anything to stop thinking about Zoe up against the wall in that damned laundry room.
"Well," she says pleasantly, "I'd rather be in my brand new office, but you blackmailed me into this trip. Now you have to deal with the consequences."
I tug on my earlobe. Something I've done since I was a kid whenever I felt uncomfortable in a situation. And right now, yep, definitely feeling uncomfortable. She's goading me into doing exactly what she wants. There's a reason why her clients in Detroit, including myself, called her the Barracuda. The woman knows what buttons to push and how to push them, and I'm convinced she wouldn't get away with nearly half of it if she wasn't so nice. And damn it, she knows how to push my buttons, too. Because the next thing I know, I'm snapping. "Fuck, all right, Zoe." She clears her throat.
Is that a yes to talking? It's a yes to us getting this over with, I growl, threading my fingers through my hair before clapping my hand back on the wheel again. Say what you want to say. She doesn't even hesitate. Why is this your last season? My shoulders flinch. That's off topic. With a little snort, she murmurs, no surprise there. Everything is off topic with you. I like it that way. I accelerate the car as we leave the highway in the woods for flatter pastures with gray cement and walls of rocks on either side of the road. Needing to redirect the conversation, I blurt out the first thing that comes to mind. You have a boyfriend, Zoe? Honestly, I'm not sure which of us is more surprised by the question. She chokes on air, reaching for the water bottle in the console. I'm not answering that. Unfamiliar jealousy pulls in my stomach. Yeah, not exactly the answer I was hoping for. And yeah, I know that makes me a hypocrite because it's not as though I've spent the last year living like a monk. Even so, one-night stands aren't nearly the same thing as relationships. For what it's worth, the only woman I've considered asking out in years is Zoe. The need to push for more information grows. So I'm assuming you aren't dating anyone? She's quiet, shifting around again, and the thought hits me that this attraction might be one-sided. Which is good. Absolutely. Tell me you're dating someone so I can get over this irrational need to strip you naked and make you mine. You know, I'm dating. Just not one person. Her voice emerges as a squeak, and she makes another grab for the water bottle. She's lying. Yeah? I lower my voice, dropping it to a husky purr. How's that working out for you? Great. She sucks down the water like she's been stuck in the Sahara for weeks. It's great. I'm really enjoying it, you know? Just playing the field or whatnot. This from the girl who used to make me tag along on her dates because she worried that all men were murderers? I shake my head, doing my best not to laugh. That good, eh? You're just taking over the Boston dating scene and showing these men what Detroit women are made of? Something flickers in her expression. Oh, absolutely. I mean, just the other day I went on a date with this... She swallows. This... Let me guess. I say, my mouth finally giving up on the battle and curling up into a grin. He was a doctor. No. A lawyer? She taps her phone against her thigh. He's a millionaire. I roll my eyes. Of course he is. Does he have a penthouse, too? You're assuming I've been up to his penthouse. The thought of Zoe alone with a guy who may or may not be her boyfriend doesn't sit well with me, even though I know she's faking this whole thing. Have you? Aren't you dating Suzanne? She counters. No. No chemistry, remember? I pause, deliberately waiting until she's practically on the edge of her seat, and then add. Doesn't mean that there won't be other women, though. Just like you're not exclusive with your penthouse-owning millionaire. You're a chauvinistic pig. At the frustration in her tone, I smother a grin. I knew you were lying. More with the phone tapping. About what? You're dating. She's quiet, probably deliberating her next move. Then stiffly, she mutters, I like my life just as it is. I hear the seat creak under her weight, and then the radio comes back on. It's an old rock classic. Seems like she's over the whole talking thing, too. I reach for the radio, prepared to turn the volume up, but my hand wavers, dropping back to the steering wheel, and I hear my voice instead. Low and raspy. Me too, Zoe. I like my life just the way it is, too. I think we both know that the other is lying.
Chapter 10. Zoe. Why did we decide to drive again? I demanded 2 hours later. My legs burn from hobbling in my stilettos for 10 blocks. My feet, though I'm too scared to look, have no doubt been torn open and are spilling blood all over the New York City sidewalk. I should have stuck with my sneakers from the morning. Andre barely spares me a glance as he keeps pace. He's so tall that his long legs naturally bring him farther, but every few yards he lets the gap close between us again. I hate flying. I forgot about that phobia of his. It's tough to imagine that the big, bad André Beaumont turned scared at the thought of being 30,000 feet in the sky. We could have taken the train, I tell him, pushing my legs to move faster. We're late for our appointment with the editor of Fame, and according to my cell phone's GPS, we're still 4 blocks away. At this rate, my feet will probably snap off as soon as we get in front of the building.
We'll be fine,
André says, then expels a bundle of curses when my ankle wobbles and I go down. He catches me about the waist, his arms strong and muscular, and it takes every bit of willpower not to beg him to carry me the rest of the way to Fame's offices.
Zoe,
he says, lifting me back up onto my feet.
You good?
I test my ankle, resisting the urge to wince when a sting flares in the bone. Not wanting to appear a wimp, I shrug off his grasp and wave my hand at him. I'm good. All good. He peers at my face, his dark eyes roving over my features.
You look green.
It's my complexion, I tell him, brushing away his worry. I'm naturally olive-toned.
You're Irish. The fact that your dad owns an Italian restaurant doesn't count.
I open my mouth to deliver a hot retort, only to realize that I don't have one. He's totally right. Over his shoulder, he flashes me one of his rare grins and then beckons me with his hands.
Give me your bag, Miss Italian, before you actually wipe out and I'm not quick enough to save you.
Out. He's showing off his Canadian side again. I don't put up a fuss and hand him my purse. Without thinking twice, he lifts the strap over his shoulder and continues to march down West 57th Avenue, like he totally isn't rocking a hot pink faux leather bag. I trail after him, attempting to lift my feet in a way that doesn't send spikes of pain shooting through the sole of my foot each time the heel of my stiletto meets concrete. Aren't hockey players supposed to have quick hands? I call out to him. André turns around, his arms spreading wide in a this-is-what-you-get pose.
Zo, we both know that I have quick hands.
That he does. Coming from a place of personal experience, I can totally attest to the fact that André does, in fact, have quick hands. Thankfully, he takes pity on me and my lack of physical strength by doubling back and taking hold of my arm. I spend the last 3 blocks cursing high-heeled shoes, hockey players, and my own ambition to reclaim my position as a respected public relations coordinator. We draw to a stop just inside the rotating glass doors of our final stop. I'm panting, totally out of shape, while André only looks like he's been out for a stroll. It's tremendously unfair. One glance at my reflection in the mirror behind the front receptionist's desk and, oh my God, I look wild, absolutely wild, and sweaty. I feel my humiliation seep from my body and splatter on the floor. Can I help you? The woman at the desk asks politely when we approach her. She cuts me a glance, and there's no way that I miss her brows lifting in horror. I'm a sight to be had. It's on the tip of my tongue to tell her to stop judging me, but André cuts in.
We are a few minutes late for an appointment with the editor for Fame magazine.
He casually slings my hot pink purse to his other arm and extends his hand.
André Beaumont.
He greets, in the most pleasant voice I've ever heard from him.
We had some unfortunate issues with parking.
The woman's expression turns starstruck at André's introduction. We don't really have parking here in New York City. It's sort of a thing. André presses a palm to the lip of the desk and leans forward.
Mm-hmm. We realized that a bit too late, unfortunately. We've just driven in from Boston, and since it took longer than expected...
Oh! She visibly jumps in her seat. You want to go upstairs?
That'd be nice.
This from André, who has quite literally ditched his moodiness for flirtation. The receptionist's brown eyes land on me. Are you his sister? André lets out a choking noise beside me. Maybe it's because I'm tired, maybe it's because I look a fright, and I'm finally coming to accept that my dream of being respected is slipping away again. Maybe it's because of 5 other million things that I refuse to think about, but I slip my hand over Andre's arm and murmur, I'd hope not. You don't kiss your sisters. The arm under my hand stiffens, signaling Andre's surprise. When he tries to pull away, I clutch tighter, refusing to let him go, and widen my smile to scary proportions. Honey, I say sweetly, shouldn't we be heading upstairs? He responds with silence, and I risk a peek up at his face. Oh, man, he is not pleased. In a voice that's tightly leashed, he growls,
Absolutely, honey.
I pat his hand and turn back to the receptionist. What floor do we need? Her gaze darts between Andre and I. The 26th. Brilliant. I give a little finger wave and tug Andre along. Each step toward the elevator echoes loudly in the marble-floored lobby. The heels of my stilettos puncture the tile, but it's Andre's personal vibration that's off the charts. We wait side by side for the elevator to descend to the lobby level. I glance at his reflection in the mirrored doors. A pulse ticks to life in his jaw. With his free hand, he tugs at his left earlobe. Uh-oh. With a ping, the elevator doors split open, and a group of businessmen in classy suits spill out. One of them stutters to a stop at the side of Andre, his mouth gaping open.
Holy shit, man!
He nudges his buddy in the side.
Holy shit, it's King Sinbin!
Andre tugs his left ear again. The man's friend reacts appropriately and echoes,
Holy shit, dude!
I'm not sure to whom the dude is directed, but Andre apparently seems to think it's for him, because his face adopts what I would consider a scary expression, lip curling and everything. And the men scurry off, their proverbial tails tucked between their legs. Seriously? I demand, pointing to their retreating backs. See? That's what gets you in trouble, Andre. You can't just go terrifying people like that and expect for it all to be just peach...
Get in the elevator.
At his high-handed tone, I arch a brow and fold my arms over my chest. Excuse me? His dark eyes flirt over me.
Zoe, get in the elevator.
No way is he pulling this sort of stunt. I stare at him unwaveringly. No. His big shoulders jolt with surprise, and I actually see the moment he decides to flip the script. The harsh lines of his mouth relax, and the creases fanning out from his eyes ease. In a cajoling tone that would totally manipulate a weaker person, he murmurs,
Please, honey, get in the elevator.
My ears twitch at the endearment. It was one thing to say it in front of the receptionist. It's another thing entirely to say it away from other people when it's just us. The elevator pings again, and this time I step through. I don't do it for him, I do it for me, because whatever showdown that's about to happen has been a long time coming, and it's probably for the best if we don't have witnesses. Andre follows behind me. We take our respective sides at either end of the small box. Slowly, like in a bad B-rated horror movie, the doors slide closed until they click and shut us in. I spare Andre a single glance, then release a breath as I jab at the button for floor 26. The elevator surges up. I hear, rather than see, Andre set my purse on the ground. My chin tips his way, my eyes narrowing on his muscular frame. "Are you over being a high-handed jerk?" I ask, shifting slightly so my back presses against the elevator wall. My hands find purchase on either side of my hips on the wooden railing. Because I can tell you right now that it is going to be a long way home if you keep up the Mr. Testosterone act. The elevator pings, pings, pings quietly with each floor we hit.
I think we have a problem.
At Andre's confession, I shrug my shoulders nonchalantly and say, It's called ego. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Andre comes closer. There's not much room in this elevator, especially not for someone of his size, but that doesn't stop me from staring at him and shoving my butt up against the wall. Andre, I say, you're kind of freaking me out. His tongue touches the center of his full bottom lip. and that one caress sends heat down to places I wish it wouldn't.
I'm freaking myself out, he answers.
Ping, ping, ping. Is this where I pretend that you took a crazy pill when I wasn't looking? Just so you know, there's nowhere for you to store my body in here. You can't get away with murder. My breath hitches at his intense expression. I know that look. The last time I saw that look, my pencil skirt ended up on the ground, and my panties landed inconspicuously on the doorknob to the Red Wings laundry room facility. Andre slowly shakes his head. When the words I suspect are coming actually leave his mouth, my knees nearly crumble beneath me.
I need to get you out of my system. You're driving me insane. Fuck, you've been driving me insane all day, forcing me to talk, wearing that sexy skirt, pretending to fall in the street.
A surprised laugh escapes me. I did almost fall, actually, I whisper.
Almost.
He returns, just as softly.
But I saved you.
The words yank at my heart. You don't save people, Andre. You plow into them and take what you need, just like you do on the ice.
Maybe I need you. Have you thought of that?
He's killing me. He's actually killing me. And now I'm thinking the impossible. Would it be so bad if I let him touch me? But we've been there before. We've been there, and it didn't work out, and it's quite likely it wouldn't work out now either. There's too much bad blood between us. It's been a week. In a voice husky with insanity, definitely insanity, he says,
And we have three more.
You said no sex.
I know.
His big body closes in on mine, his hands going to the wall on either side of my head. Immediately, I catch the scent of his cologne, and it smells delicious, like sandalwood mixed with fresh laundry.
You're dating your penthouse-owning millionaire. I'm dating women. We both like our lives, but maybe we just need to take care of this attraction, or at least prove that it doesn't exist once and for all.
Does he really think it's as simple as that? My chin tips back so that I can meet his glittering black eyes. This isn't a good idea. His gaze falls to my mouth.
I know that, too.
I curl my fingers around the railing and try not to notice that in doing so, I inadvertently thrust my breasts forward, against his chest, like a complete hussy. I try one last time to hold my ground, to stand strong against the man who wrecked me and then finished me off by leaving. I don't like you. My voice isn't quite steady. It isn't all that forceful. And Andre takes notice. His hand, the one to the right of my head, shifts over to lightly touch my face. The pads of his fingers are rough, abrasive against my skin, and, God, I love it.
I don't like you either.
For some reason, I don't think he's telling the truth. I worry that I'm not either. My eyes flutter shut when his fingers gently trace the slope of my nose, and when his thumb brushes over my lips, I release a shuddered sigh.
I'm going to kiss you,
he tells me softly.
I'm going to kiss you, and I'm going to make damn sure you go home thinking about it tonight. And then we're going to return to our lives that we both like, and get back to what matters.
My eyes snap open at his crude words, just as the elevator jolts to a halt and the doors slide open. Get back to what matters? Is he serious? With a hand to his, incredibly hard chest, I give a good shove. My ankle protests when I swoop down low to gather my discarded purse, and with a sharp tug at my skirt and my loose-fitting pink top, I put myself back in order. Or as in order as I can be, considering that Andre was less than 30 seconds away from kissing me. I don't turn around when he says my name the first time. I don't turn around when he says it the second time. On the third time, I whirl back, thankful for the fact that the elevator has exited into a quiet hallway. I strut toward him all business. Yes, I add a sway to my hips. Yes, I come at him with fingers pointing and at the ready. I jab him once in the chest, and I'm not surprised when the flesh beneath my attack doesn't budge. He's as hard as stone. Now that I think about it, his heart is the same way. Andre catches my wrist, his gaze dipping down to search my face in overt confusion.
What did I say?
Unbelievable. See, this is why the man is enemy number one in the hockey world. He's completely incapable of playing nice with anyone. I yank my hand out from his grasp. Let me put it this way for you, Andre. I point at him, then swivel my finger to point at myself. This? Us? Never happening. You laid down the ground about no sex, and I'm completely fine with that. I don't have sex with men who think that I don't matter. Just like that, his expression shuts down.
Zoe, Zoe, you know that I didn't mean it like that.
My hands go to my hips. Then tell me how you meant it. His eyes go wide, and he reaches up to rub the back of his neck with one hand.
Jesus, Zoe, I have no idea. I'm just saying that it'd probably do us some good. Get the sexual attraction out of the way so we can live our lives.
Fury heats my words when I counter. I am living my life, Andre. I've been living my life since the day you screwed me in a goddamn laundry room and then never spoke to me again. Silence meets my words. It's the first time either of us has directly mentioned our past, and the awkwardness is palpable. I almost wish I could snatch them back, except, no, no, I will not. He can't just walk about as if nothing ever happened. In a voice I wish wasn't so testy, I mutter, nothing to say to that? His hand leaves his neck to scrape over the lower half of his face.
Let's not do this here.
My eyes narrow. Are we going to talk about it on the way home? I mentally scoff. Home, like we share the same house, the same life, the same heart. Utterly ridiculous. Andre tugs on his ear.
Maybe we should just forget.
Over the ringing in my ears, all I hear are excuses. I throw up a hand and his mouth clamps shut. You know what? You're right. It doesn't matter. Not what happened then or what happened after that. I don't care. But don't kiss me, Andre. My heart pounds with adrenaline. It pounds so loud that all I can hear is the blood thundering in my head. Don't kiss me today and don't kiss me tomorrow. I won't survive another round with him between the sheets. Not if he decides to up and leave me again, just like he did last time. Not that we were anywhere between a set of sheets a year ago. But as he stares at me resolutely with an expression that borders on hollow, I can't help but wonder if I'm making the right decision, if I've even read him correctly. I remind myself as we silently head toward Fame's office that this is for the best. Andre is a client, my client. I can't go back down that road to temptation again. Not even if I'm tempted. Not even if, for a few minutes today, I remembered the old him. The old us. I have to be strong, because if I'm not, Andre Beaumont will use me and spit me back out when he's done. Of that, I have no doubt. Chapter 11. Zoe. 20 days left. Over the next 24 hours, I can't shake the sense that I'm missing something when it comes to Andre. The nagging sensation follows me when I spend 3 hours on the phone, talking shop with local reporters about considering Andre for a feature piece. It follows me when I email 3 different charities, all with the purpose of signing Andre on as a sponsor. It doesn't shake off when I end up in a near argument with one of Andre's dropped sponsors over the phone, either. I can still hear the man's derisive snort when I mention re-signing Andre during the next annual quarter. Beaumont? He sneered at the start of our call. Not happening. We only took him on because he won the cup 2 years ago with the Red Wings, and even that ended up being a huge debacle with the CEO. You'll excuse me when I say I'm not feeling up to another battle. I can promise you that Mr. Beaumont has seen the errors of his ways, I told the man, lying through my teeth. Call me Ms. Cynical, but I doubted Andre had seen the light on anything. Regaining his sponsorship with your organization would also influence the opinion of others. I took a deep breath and went for broke. You could single-handedly make a difference in his career if only you'll say yes.
A man can't change his stripes when they're tattooed on, Miss McKenzie. Beaumont is the same way.
My fingers tightened around the receiver because, honestly, I felt the same way. Shouldn't we refrain from judging others, Mr. Campbell?
Perhaps,
Mr. Campbell murmured ambivalently. So you consider taking him back?
No.
Mr. Campbell, I said, just short of begging, give him a chance.
Unlike you, Miss McKenzie, my firm has decided that Andre Beaumont is all out of chances.
Something about the way he said that struck me as odd. What do you mean, unlike me?
The fact that you're dating him again after your scandal last year? It doesn't matter, Miss McKenzie. The answer remains no. Have a good day.
Dating him? As I stuffed my arms into my leather jacket at the end of the day, I deduced that I'm no closer to figuring out the missing link to Andre's unfinished puzzle, but it's pretty clear to me that the people I've spoken to today think that Andre and I are a thing. Over my dead body? We haven't even spoken since our almost kiss in the elevator at Fame yesterday morning. If you're wondering, our ride back to Boston was as awkwardly painful as you might imagine. I'm pretty sure that the only words we exchanged were at a highway-side gas station when he refilled his car and I stuffed myself into a cramped restroom stall to pee. Zoe! At the sound of the female voice, I glance up. After a week of working for Golden Lights, Gwen James and I haven't really stopped to chat since that very first day. She's too busy, I think, dealing with clients who actually respect her, and I've been too busy wallowing in Dante's ninth circle of hell with Andre Beaumont. Sliding my purse strap over my shoulder, I tap a few keys out on the computer keyboard and shut the desktop down. Heading home? I ask her, hoping she won't dig too deeply into my epic fail of a workday. The last thing I need her to know is that I'm on the verge of letting down Golden Lights Media in a big way. With a shake of her head, Gwen's long red hair bounces like something out of a hair commercial. I'm slightly envious, if only because my dark hair rarely does anything but act like a wild child, completely untamed. Stepping into my office, Gwen takes a quick look around before settling her hands on her hips. Actually, I'm not heading home yet. I was hoping to catch you before you left. That doesn't sound good. Clearly, I'm about to be given the can, and be forced to work at Vittoria for the rest of my life. Bracing myself for the worst, I squeak, Oh? Do you have plans tonight? I blink. All day I'd planned to head home and lick my wounds. Maybe it's been too long since I've been in the field, but after 9 hours of working toward a total crapshoot goal, I'm feeling rather sensitive. Oh, God. I've lost my thick skin. I wonder if it's the sort of thing you can earn back, or once you've become a certifiable watering pot, likely to cry at any moment a door shuts in your face, you've lost all hope. Zoe, Gwen prompts, her blue eyes carefully studying my face. You there? Sorry, yes, I'm here, and no plans. My dad mentioned something about helping out again at Vittoria tonight, but I'd rather not do so. Did you need me for something? The Blades are up against the Philadelphia Flyers tonight. Through the grapevine, I heard that a few prospective sponsors will be up in the box, and I thought that perhaps... The word opportunity flashes before my eyes like an actual slideshow, and I immediately stand to attention, my shoulders pushing back and my chin coming up. I'll go. This will be great. Casting a quick glance down at my wristwatch, I note the time. The game is starting in 30 minutes, isn't it? If I leave now, I'll make it with time to spare. Great! Gwen claps her hands together, adding, Perfect. I really didn't want to go alone. Alone? You're coming along? This cannot be good. Is this a test to see how well I do out in the wild? Oh, no. She waves her hand in the air, dismissing me with just a flap of her slender arm. Definitely not. You really should be there tonight because it might open some doors up for you. I'm just... Well, can I let you in on a little secret? Since I see no way out of saying no, and I'd also like to keep my job as long as possible, I shrug. Sure, of course. Gwyn cuts a swift glance to the door. Apparently satisfied that no one is eavesdropping, she tells me, I totally made the mistake of dating one of the head guys in the Blades Hockey Administration. The general manager, actually. And since he's definitely going to be there tonight... You want me there as a shield? I throw out bluntly. Her arms lift in a delicate shrug. Think of it as being each other's body armor. We can lend each other some much-needed support. Since Gwyn James reminds me of a dolled-up piranha, it's probably not a bad idea to have her around. Plus, if she gets to know me a little better, perhaps this stupid trial run will become a permanent gig. The thought of obtaining other clients besides the NHL's bad boy enforcer brings a smile to my face. All right, let's do this. 1 hour later, I'm regretting my life decisions. Gwyn is certainly a body shield, specifically in the literal sense. The woman is practically glued to my side. We're barely through the door to the owner's box before Gwyn bumps my shoulder with hers, like we're suddenly best girlfriends. Do you see him? She whispers, except that it's not really a whisper. I'm sure she knows how to whisper. Her hand leaves my arm to point at a group of men in the far corner of the gray carpeted room. Right there, the one in the black suit. Ahem. They're all wearing black suits. My gaze scours the men, finally stopping on a decent-looking guy with coppery hair and a friendly smile. He looks wealthy, so probably Gwyn's type. Is that him? I give a little nod with my chin. Then I look down, and... The man is wearing vibrant red shoes. What? Gwyn shakes her head adamantly, then gives me a crushed look. Absolutely not. Do I look like the kind of girl who'd go for a ginger? I blink. Aren't you a ginger? Gwyn clucks her tongue. Girl, she says in that way people do when they're about to school you on life. It's called hair dye. I'm not a natural redhead. Anyway, you didn't hear that from me. Also, there are different classifications of redheads. There's me, and I have a very deep cherry hue. And then there's a carrot top. Her blue eyes land on the man we've been talking about, and he must sense us watching him because he glances over his shoulder. His eyes fall right on Gwyn, and I swear he looks like the heavens have opened up and gifted him a goddess in the form of Gwyn James, who gives the man a bright, white smile and out of the corner of her mouth says, "He's a carrot top. No thank you." I don't even know what to say to that. Her smile never fades when she points to the guy standing next to the man with the friendly, carrot-top hair. That guy, she says triumphantly. That guy turns out to be wearing what most would consider an eyesore, blue leather shoes, a flamingo pink shirt, and pastel yellow chinos. He looks like Easter. If Easter were a person and not represented to the masses as a cartoon-like bunny bearing candy... The words stick in my throat, and I cough into my free hand. He's, very good-looking. The look Gwyn gives me says she doesn't believe me worth a damn. You don't have to lie. He's not bad looks-wise, but I will say that he is pretty fantastic in bed. What he can do with his tongue should be illegal. Nope, totally not going there. Tell me how you met him. As Gwyn waxes on about the Blades GM knocking boots with her between the sheets, I scan the owner's box for familiar faces. I spent the entire cab ride studying important figures within the Blades organization, but now that I'm here, maybe it's my nerves, but I just can't bring to mind anyone that I reviewed. There's also the fact that for the first time in my career with NPR, I feel not quite comfortable. Back in Detroit, I had no troubles mingling. I talked with the Red Wings owner about his daughters. After the game, I waltzed into the team's locker room to speak with my clients about what was needed from them. I'd seen more than my fair share of dropped towels and know the exact reason why Detroit's goalie went by the name Shorty. And I'm not talking about the